Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.
Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio, brought to you by the Hard Truth Distilling Company in Brown County, Indiana.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world,
pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh. Now, from the Hard Truth Studios, here's Jim Coyle.
Hello, sports fans. Welcome aboard to another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio on this Tuesday. I hope everything is going well for you and you're having a good day. Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News, Fox, and Big Ten Networks with us as well. Mike, how are you doing? How's your week starting?
I'm doing well, Jim. I happened to attend a baseball game played by your favorite team Monday night at the best ballpark in America. Not the best team, but the PNC Park is a great place to visit. We took my brother-in-law to see his team, the Pirates, lose again for his birthday, which is Wednesday. And Deborah wore her red sweater, stood out in the crowd, and we enjoyed our evening.
Well, that's all you could do. It's all you could ask of, really. Go out. That's what it's supposed to be. Go out and have a good time. Hope for the win, but a lot of 162 games, so I guess it's a lot less of a chance of getting a win when you go out to the ballpark. But it's supposed to be just a fun time. I loved Major League ballparks have changed. I mean, well, all arenas have changed, all sporting events. They've tried to make them, and so many of them that I would love to get to. I've been to Great American. It's okay. I mean, there's nothing special about it. It's a nice arena. Right. A hell of a lot better than Riverfront Stadium, I'll tell you that. But yes. Yeah, but there's some really nice stadiums out there that they've built, and throughout all of sports, it's funny how the mindset has changed into, oh boy, really catering to the fans and trying to make them comfortable, make them spend a little more money. But yeah, it's but everything changes. That's part of life, right?
Yeah, I think that in the past, there was just a, you know, build something that's functional. I mean, when I was younger, probably before your time, Riverfront Stadium, what became Synergy Field, and Three Rivers Stadium were both built within about 6 months of each other. They both were finished within about 6 months of each other. And they were
Philadelphia's veteran stadium too, right?
Right. And they were very cold. They were functional because you could play both sports there, football and baseball. And you could have the same home for both. You move a few things around and it worked for both, but they weren't very inviting. They weren't very, there wasn't much charm to them. And the new era of understanding that with all the games on television, if you want spectators to leave their home, you have to give them a experience that they can't get just watching the television. And that's what you have now. And as I mentioned, you know, the PNC Park is just a beautiful venue. It's got great charm and a great atmosphere. It's not obviously the best team in Major League Baseball, far from it, but it's a beautiful place to go to a game. And there are lots of things to recommend about Great American Ballpark. It just, I didn't understand why they went against the grain when they built it. I think they felt like the idea of the old timey ballpark with new amenities had been played out, but I think they missed a window there when they designed a park that just doesn't have great charm. It has a lot of great amenities. There are some terrific things there. The 4192 Club is really nice. I've sat in the seats that give you access to that. There's another place behind home plate where you can. I don't remember exactly what they call it, but some of the lower level box seats get access to a nice lounge there. Out, you know, in the concourses, there's great different concessions and things like that that improve your experience. And the construction of the banks with the various restaurants and clubs and bars and such that took forever to finish, well past the construction of Great American. But now that that's all done, it's a great game day experience in terms of just going down there and being in that atmosphere and then ultimately being in the game. And if you go to Great American Ballpark, they haven't ripped your brick out of the ground yet, which the Pittsburgh Pirates did in this offseason. I don't know if you heard about this story, Jim, but when they opened it, they sold a commemorative brick that you could have installed in the sidewalk outside the ballpark. And I had one. What I had on there was the nickname that I shared with my father as a way to honor him. He had passed away a decade earlier. And so I just we put that on. And this in the offseason, they decided that the bricks had become uneven. And so they needed to fix the sidewalk. So instead of finding a way to repurpose the bricks, it would have cost them, but you could have redone it all and put the bricks back in place, or B, telling everybody, look, we have to tear these up because it's not safe. Now, they didn't do that either. They C, tore them up and threw them in a dump. It's true. They tore them up and threw them in a dump. So last night was the first chance I had to walk on the sidewalk they used to replace my brick and that of thousands of other Pittsburgh area citizens.
Oh, wow. They should have at least given you the opportunity to come down and pick your brick up.
Yeah, they should have, but they did not. There were lots of different ways they could have handled it, and they took the Pirates. How you could be in that business, Jim, and not understand what the reaction would be like when people found out what happened, it is just beyond me. I don't know how you can rise to that level of decision-making in a not only a public-facing business, but one in which passion and involvement is a huge part. It's not like where I buy my meat is one thing, or where I buy my Teddy Grahams. I don't have to have a great emotional investment in the store. I just go what's closest and what's cheapest. But you don't go to a baseball game because it's close and cheap. You go because you have a affection for the game or the team or whatever. And they just totally missed on that. I just don't understand. They, as I mentioned, they have not done that at Great American Ballpark, where my wife has a brick because she was the public relations executive, as I think I've mentioned before, who coordinated the opening of Great American Ballpark and the implosion of Synergy Field. So her brick is still in place because the Reds know how to handle their public. That's one thing they do very well. I'd like to see them get a little more power in the middle of their lineup, but at least they know how to deal with the public.
Yeah, I'd say that's a lot better public relations than that just sucks. You would think that, but common sense just doesn't seem to play in a lot of times.
Yes.
It's out the window, out of the window. College basketball is about to be really, the changes we've seen have been all kinds of things, you know, the transfer portal, NIL, but there's another change coming And that is a wave of European basketball players that is going to be hitting college. And it gets me thinking that there should be a rule like they have in Europe where they allow only two Americans on a team. Maybe there should be a rule allowing only two Europeans, or I mean, not Europeans, two foreign players on a team, on a college team. Since this is an American college, an American education institution, this is not a pro team. Illinois has based their team off of this right now. Brad Underwood, am I blaming him? I think he's been a magician. I think he has done a masterful job replacing players year after year. He loses such great players, but he's able to go out and find something, and this time he's going in a different way. But there is definitely going to be an impact. I read this in The Athletic. The agent for Joker would never normally talk about college players, but he had 70 meetings at the Final Four, his last past Final Four, and expects to represent between 35 and 50 college basketball players. The men's basketball from Serbia, the North American basketball. They're coming, and they're coming quickly because this guy knows that there's money to be made, and it's all about the money, and that's strictly because of that, and it's going to change the game.
Well, it certainly does. It has the capacity to. I mean, it depends on how successful they are. There's nothing inherently superior about the players coming from Europe to play in Division One. They have to prove that they're as good or better or whatever. What there does seem to be an advantage of sorts is that many of them have played in professional leagues for a period of time. That's not the advantage. The advantage is they've played for a period of time and are now at ages that customarily would be a college graduate age or a senior age. And I think there's a question about if you're entering NCAA basketball at age 22, having played in Europe for 3 to 4 years, and you may or may not have played at a high level or whatever, but you played there. What are you? Are you a freshman? Are you a junior? I mean, are you going to play until you're 26 or 27? I mean, I think that's the issue that the NCAA has to wrestle with a little bit, because I don't know that that's what's out of line with the normal progression. Look, if you're leaving, and let's just to use a team, FC Barcelona, to come to the United States at age 18, you're the same as everybody else. You're as good or not good as everybody else. And there's a kid named Sar, who right now his first name is Dame, or I don't know exactly how he pronounces Dame, and his last name is Sar, Sarr, and he played in the Hoop Summit game last month in Portland, Oregon, against the best of the United States, and he was among the best players on the floor. Boozer was in that game. Many of the other top American prospects were in that game. AJ DeBonsa was playing for the United States in that game. And this Dame Sar was playing for the international team, the world team, and he was terrific. But he's only 18 years old. Now, he's so good that he's been a part of FC Barcelona's primary team. And they are one of the best teams in Spain, one of the better teams in Europe. And he's played at that level. But again, if he comes to the United States, he's coming to play college. He's coming at an age when most college players are entering NCAA basketball. So that seems, for lack of a better word, normal. But the oddity is when there are guys who are playing their first college games well into their 20s, and how will the United States and the NCAA grade them, for lack of a better term? Where are they when they enter NCAA basketball?
Well, I guess if they've been playing in a league or whatever, they haven't gone to school per se, so they'll probably enter as a freshman.
Now they may, Jim, they may only have the intention of playing 1 year.
I was going to say most of them are probably not looking at 4 years anyway.
Right.
These guys, because they've all been mostly playing professionally, to be honest with you. I mean, these guys are, but some of these teams are already smart enough to do it. Not just Illinois, who had two first rounders last year, and now they got both the Visage brothers and some other players. But Louisville, Kentucky, Purdue, is this what gets Purdue over the line to get to a national championship? Because they just never, the way that the old school style of playing is not going to get it done. But Matt Painter's added some players, and one of these European players. I don't know if that's going to be enough to get them over the line to get that. But these are top teams, and they know what they're doing. So it's going to be interesting to see if it changes the game. Like, they definitely, European players have definitely made a mark in the NBA, and they even have their own step, Mike. The Euro step.
yes. As it's originally, when it came into play, the Euro step, the idea was when you went to make a layup, you went off your outside foot instead of your inside foot. I mean, we all grew up making layups off our inside foot, which, if you're going to the right hand side, is your left leg. We've always done that. The idea behind the Euro step was to go off the right leg on a right-handed layup, which throws the defender off. When then eventually it just became take two steps, and that's a Euro step. I mean, I don't know how that happened, but it did. It's a travel. It just is. I watched Chet Holmgren in a game last week against Denver. He came to a stop with 2 feet together at the foul line. And okay, so now you've got a pivot foot because the ball is up. You've got a pivot foot. It's one or the other. If you decide that it's your right leg and you reach your left leg forward, as would be typical for a right-handed player, okay, that's cool. So that's your pivot foot. And if you can make a layup from there, and he may be one of the few humans who could, fine. It's a layup. But he didn't. He took a step with his left leg and then with his right leg, and then he scored. And they said, okay, that's fine. It's never been legal in the history of basketball, but now it is.
Yeah, it's funny. So it's going to be interesting to see how it changes, how it affects the game. I don't know that college basketball being so big, it's hard to imagine them really impacting the game, but they will impact on some of these teams. But it's not like they're going to come over, and this is not the Beatles coming over invading America. But it's going to change it, or it's going to add another a variation to the college game, and probably a little change, to be honest with you, when you have teams that, like Illinois, who have based their upcoming season will be based on, yes, on this. They're loaded with those European players, but then most other teams have just added one to in their spots, but there are so many coming over. It reminds me of daggone it, Marshall. I think it may be Marshall, who their soccer team, they loaded up their soccer team with all European players and were having success all of a sudden, national success, which they had never been a player in that game before. That aggravated me because I'm like, that's while everyone is bought, but that was really a bought team, bringing in Europeans. And I that is not college athletics to me. When you're bringing in an entire team of players that are not even from the United States, that it's like turns it into an international pro league.
Well, it depends on the nature of the student athletes, though. Are they going to school? Are they, you know, are they there to in the case of soccer, honestly, Jim, I mean, most of the players are there to try to get some education, because if they were good enough to be professionals at the European level, they would have stayed where they were. They would get into the team into the rosters at Liverpool or Manchester United or Barcelona or wherever. The difference with basketball is that this is the place, and they are trying to get an open door into the league. That's the idea. And in reality, like if the young man who is coming to Purdue is great, and I don't know, I haven't even watched his tape yet, but if he's great and he can make himself into a draftable player, then he can get into the league. And if he's not, and he can't make himself into a draftable player, he can always go back home and play professionally there. But with the experience that having played NCAA basketball will give him. I mean, there are lots of discussions. You can find them from people who know international basketball. And I think the best source for this in a lot of ways is Fran Fraschilla. He really knows the international leagues. And obviously he's an expert on NCAA Division I. And where does NCAA Division I competition fit in the order, in the rank? I mean, obviously it's not the NBA. It's not the G League. It's probably not Spain's ACB. But where does it hit? Is it better than the basketball they play in Germany? I don't know. I don't have the answer to that because I don't watch European leagues and don't get the occasion to watch them very often. But I think there are people who would tell you that Division I NCAA basketball is a pretty high level of competition and can be helpful for a lot of these younger European players. They can get high level competition. A lot of times the younger European players are stuck on the bench and can't get off. When Luka Doncic came from, I believe he played for Barca. When he came, he had been a starter at 18 and the MVP of the EuroLeague. And that was so unusual. It's one of the reasons why he was able to walk right into the NBA. But a lot of the guys that are drafted very high by NBA teams out of the European leagues haven't played that much, haven't done that much. This is a way, and this is why I think the young man Sarr is thinking about Duke. You know, he can go from being a very important player at Barca to the guy at Duke or option 1A or 1B versus Boozer. I think I confuse. I think it's Cam Boozer's that's the really good player. And so that gives him an opportunity to play in that circumstance and get better and get. There's something about having the opportunity to be a star, Jim, that makes you better. Stardom is an acquired, it's something you learn, just like you learn jump shooting, just like you learn ball handling, just like you learn boxing out. Being a star, being a first option, is a skill, and you're unlikely to get that at 18. In many, you know, in many European situations, but you're very likely to get that if you're gifted at an NCAA Division I program.
Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News with us here at the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios. Lots more coming up. Hey, welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on this Tuesday. Glad to have you along. I hope your day is going well. Looks like it may rain out there. We had a tornado come through here last Friday, Mike. And luckily I had to go out of town immediately after the show last week and leave to go up north. And a tornado literally touched down. There's two spots that it looks like it hit, kind of bounced and must have risen back up. Because on two different roads, there's a post office on one where there used to be a post office on one. It's no longer there. It looked like a bomb just blew it up. And wow. I thought that was the damage. I mean, and that's on Rogers Road, which runs, what is strict? I think that is north and south. Anyway, then I believe that is College or Walnut. Anyway, it runs into town as I would take into town. And I was driving up the other day. I'm like, what's this? I'm like, oh my God, there was a billboard. It looked like you had taken a paper clip and just twisted it up. That's what this thing, I was just shocked. I think there was some houses that it literally just must have hit them dead center. Usually you can see damage to houses, poof, gone. Another little building lifted up and just put on the ground, a car. But what amazed me was the massive damage done in minimal spots. A tornado usually just leaves a path. And it looked like this thing must have hit, bounced, and hit again, because it was like a bomb went off and then a bomb went off. But crazy and lucky that there was no loss of life. But wild. But the weather's crazy, man. They don't get many tornadoes in the Pittsburgh area, do they?
No, not really. We had a big storm about 2 weeks ago that wiped out power for much of the city. Here, where I live, north of the city, in the corridor where I did live, we were very fortunate. The storm went through like that, and nothing happened. We had a rough one last year that... It's interesting what weather can do, Jim. I mean, we had these trees outside our back deck, and they are now basically they were at one point perpendicular to the ground, and now they are parallel to the ground. The wind just whipped through. It was like a mini cell, and now they are permanently sideways. It didn't do any damage to us or anything. One of our neighbors had a tree come down and took out their roof. It's just interesting to see. It just went through one time, blew them, and blew them so hard that they're permanently parallel to the ground. The leaves on the trees, the top of the tree, parallel rather than standing straight up, it goes horizontal to the ground. It's amazing what weather can do. Glad to hear that no one in your area was killed. That's There have been a lot around the country that were, and it's just, spring is always a difficult time in that part of the country.
Yeah. Thoughts and prayers to those though affected. I know just a horrible thing to deal with. Like I said, there are some homes that are just gone. So that means stuff that was lost. And so thinking about everybody that dealing with that, and hope you guys can get through that. Got to make a segue, as hard as it is, but got to talk about basketball. Indiana is going about things differently. Their roster kind of set. We were all wondering, are they going to get a big guy, quote unquote, another big guy? And I think they're set with Reed Bailey and Sam Alexis and Josh Harris, two guys that are rim protector kind of guys that get after it, rebound a lot. And the offense is going to be very different. One that moves a lot more, that has more spacing, that is more tempo, a lot more shooting. So it's going to be a very, very different offense that might allow for that, because you look at Purdue, they're their guy in the middle is Trey Kaufman Wren at 6'9", and that's what Indiana is going to have. Reed Bailey is 6'10", but he can also stretch the floor, so it'll be a little different. And then with the Sam Alexis, Josh Harrison, but then you got a wealth of wings. So I'm interested to see how this plays out, man. It ought to be fun. And the thing is, they fill that, and then the staff, they have hit the road on the recruiting trail, and they have made a lot of offers, but they are offering guys that are well-known, but they're also, I think that Indiana did this before and did not have much success in landing these guys. I think it's going to be very, very different this time because of what is being sold. Indiana's offense was so limited previously, and you knew what it was. And now Darren DeVries can tell a guy, hey, this is your role. This is what you'll be doing, because everybody does have a role there. It is going to be a much more team dependent on five guys instead of two so much as it was. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun for the Indiana basketball fans.
Well, I think offensively that they're going to shoot the basketball as well as any Indiana team has in a long time. They've got a wealth of guys who can hit from the perimeter, and they can do a lot of damage from out there. You mentioned Purdue, and I think that's an apt comparison relative to the front court, because after Daniel Jacobson was hurt last year and lost for the season after basically playing about 15 minutes or so, maybe 15 minutes of an exhibition or whatever it was, he did not contribute at all to the Boilers in the 25 season. And if you asked Matt Painter in February or early March, he would tell you that the one concern he had with that team was that they just couldn't protect the rim, and that's something that he understood was a limitation for them. And they needed that. And I think that that's a likely problem for Indiana. But think about it. Okay, so Purdue couldn't protect the rim, so their ceiling was the Sweet 16, let's say. And almost maybe they could have played in the Elite Eight. Indiana would take that right now. It's been a while since they've seen the second weekend of the NCAA tournament. It's been quite a while. So if you're limited – in terms of your championship pursuits by that particular area of your team, so be it. Right now, just get good. And I think that they're building toward that. I think that the roster that they've put together, especially from the offensive standpoint, they're going to be good. And how good is going to depend on how effective they can be. Can they be elite offensively? Because remember last year, Purdue offensively was not typical. They were seventh in the nation in KenPom offense. So how good are you? And then how well can you hide what you don't do well defensively? Purdue was adequate. They were 53rd in the country in that department in defense, according to KenPom. If your offense is seventh and your defense is 50th, you can win games in the NCAA tournament. You don't. It's not guaranteed, but you can. And Purdue showed last year they won twice in the tournament. In the Sweet 16, they were one inbounds play away from having a chance to win against Houston. Again, not having that rim protector made a difference there, and that cost them there. But the team they played was pretty strong, and they still were right there with them. So it shows what you can do if you build an elite offense. I don't know whether or not Indiana can get to that level. We'll see. But I think they have a chance to be really hard to defend.
Yeah, and that's going to be something we'll have to wait and find out to see how this team gels together. And also, speaking of defend, to see how they defend. I think that is going to be a key point for Indiana. They're going to have to play top defense. You have to make up for if they're offensively superior, then that's a big change, big deal. If they're not superior, then you have to make up for that defensively, right. And we'll see if they can do that. But it sounds like they have the the wares to accomplish that. And it sounds like that's something Darren DeVries is about anyway. And that is a breath of fresh air because there are so many teams, Iowa, that used to just play offense and no defense. Tom Crean. I can throw Tom Crean in there, and I don't mean that as a disrespect. It's a philosophy. Hey, I'm going to score this, and you got to outscore me. And I'm sure that was the philosophy was not no defense. But obviously, when you're focusing so much on offense, it puts you in bad positions probably defensively. But it'll be interesting to see how this goes, because the Big Ten is never going to be easy ever. And it won't be easy again this year. Illinois, we know they rebuild. You got Purdue, who many people have ranked at the top of the country already. And there's going to be plenty of other teams that are going to Michigan. I don't know that Michigan's not better than Purdue. It's going to be interesting to see.
It depends. I think Michigan depends on, how does he pronounce his name? Yaxel Landeborg. Who's in the draft and a borderline first round pick. Does he stay in the draft? Michigan's going to be good without him, but I think he's a difference between whether they're Purdue good or maybe a little bit further down the line. I think Michigan State still is going to be very strong. UCLA has a chance to be really good. It's going to be an outstanding league again this year. Probably not 14 bids. Like the SEC was last year, but still a really, really powerful league.
Yeah, and Indiana's recruiting already has shown, not the offers, but the fact that these coaches are getting out. They were out all weekend. They were after it. Darren DeVries is leading the charge, which is something that Indiana did not see before, and I think it's going to make a difference. But how much difference does it make in high school recruiting? Because if you're going after these elite guys, are these guys that you expect to be around for 4 years, which no one is really going to be around for 4 years? So I guess they're just trying to hit those elite guys that will come in and make a quick difference, that are impact players, because you're still going to be hitting the portal a lot, I would imagine.
Well, I've pointed this out during the Final Four, Jim. You need to build your program on both fronts. And early on in any coach's tenure, the first place they're probably going to need to go is the portal, because that gets you the opportunity to get really good fast. And you're unless you are John Calipari or Duke, you're probably not going to be able to get those guys that are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 that can play at the level necessary to change your program immediately. That's a difference in how you're able to run your deal. So I think that is the difference for a coach that's just starting out in a particular program. So I think if you look at it that way, they start at the high end, see what they can do, and then if they're able to get some of those guys, great. If they're not, then they can go to the portal. They also need to get a couple of guys in that, if they can, in that 20 to 45 range that can be Donovan Klingon types, those kinds of players that helped UConn win the championship, that became 1 or 2 year guys. Those guys can also make a difference in how you perform if your goal is Final Fours and championships. And I know, obviously, that's where Indiana wants to get back.
Absolutely, that's where they want to go. Indiana football, switching gears a little bit. Over and under last year was 5.5. Boy, that was gravy for anybody that took that. And I knew, I laughed, and I still laugh. I looked at it, I'm like, are you kidding me? They're going to start 6-0. And I legitimately felt that. And because normally I would not do that. That's not something that I would do. But I was like, oh, hell yes.
They're giving free money. You got to take it, right, Jim?
that was a lifetime. My only regret is not being smart enough and courageous enough to make it a serious bet to where it would have paid. Although it took 4 months for that to happen, and I'm thinking you could have just bet a win loss damn game and made the same amount of money. But Indiana football now, the over under set for this year, Mike.
Yes.
Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News with us. 8.5. Indiana has only won 8 games like 7 times in the history of the program, something like that. And so for their over-under to be at 8.5 is another, I hate to use the word crazy because it's not crazy anymore. But it is just mind-boggling. They are legit. And they are back again. This is a team that I have said that I think is a better team than they were last year. The record might not reflect that because their schedule is a hell of a lot tougher, but they are a legit team and the Big Ten is tough. I saw a thing yesterday that Urban Meyer says the Big Ten has passed the SEC, at least at the top. It may not have the depth, but they've passed them at the top. Maybe so. They pulled in the last two national champions. But the Big Ten is also starting to increase depth. You've got teams like Illinois and Indiana that were not doing it, but now are not only doing it, but they're doing it at the CFP level. Illinois is ranked in the top 10 right now. Iowa is going to be a team that's tough. UCLA getting better. What USC going to be like? I don't know. But UCLA has Nico Amalivan, and they've got Tino Sunseri from Indiana as their offensive coordinator now. So a lot of differences, but Michigan, Ohio State, the mainstays, Penn State ranked number one, I saw by some people. So it's going to be a fun time, but I'm so looking forward to football. And for Indiana football fans, this is something they probably never truly had, and that is looking forward to a season that is, at worst, they're going to a bowl game. A bowl game is not even, to me, a consideration for this team. I think that their bottom is 8-4 at worst, and so it's just crazy to see the change that has happened in a program that was dead for its existence.
Yeah, I think that what Kurt Cignetti has done is phenomenal, but I do think that there's the need to do everything that you're saying this year, like do worst case 8-4 or do better case and contend for the playoff again. And if he does do those things, then you're talking about, at that point, people really believing in the program, not just taking a chance on it, but believing in it. And I think that opens new doors that Kurt hasn't already been able to open. And there aren't many, but they're out there. And those are the doors that make the difference between being a first-round team in the playoff and talking about winning and advancing. So we'll see what happens. But I do think that what he's brought to Indiana football, hey, it's always been a nice place to go watch a football game. Bloomington's one of the great college towns in America.
Yeah, you could have moved about. You could have chose any seats you wanted.
Exactly what I was going for there, Jim. Exactly what I was going to say. You could pick your seat. You can stretch out a little bit. If there would be nobody in front of you, you could put your foot up on the seat, all that stuff. It's not like that now, but it's still a beautiful place to go see a college football game. And you have a chance to have a second consecutive significant season. And that's really exciting. And it's going to be a long 3 months before the ball gets kicked into the air for people who are excited about that. But while you're waiting, Jim, You got tomorrow night, you got the chance to watch the Indiana Pacers play for a spot in the NBA Finals. The series coming up against the Knicks will be a lot of fun. I've loved watching the Pacers. You know, Deb and I left Cincinnati and we took along the Reds, and when we left Indiana for back home, we took along the Pacers and the Fever, and not a much better time to be a Pacer and Fever follower than right now. Both franchises are doing wonderful things.
Yeah, the Pacers are legit a shot to get to the NBA Finals, but as are the Knicks. So this should be a fun series to watch, and it is a kind of a defining series for the Pacers. You know, they've got to get over that impediment and get to the finals and show that they are an elite worthy team.
It's a difficult challenge. With the Knicks have in Jalen Brunson, one of the most difficult players in the league to defend. Karl Towns, an excellent offensive player who gives them real size and is a really interesting matchup for Miles Turner. It's a team full of players who are hard hustle, get after it guys, the Villanova crew, I call them, with Hart and Bridges. Those guys are dynamic and tough. I really do think the Pacers are a better team. It doesn't necessarily mean they go out and prove it again, but they have been outstanding in these playoffs, the Pacers. They have been phenomenal. I think in some ways they're being undersold about the level at which they've played, Jim. They took out the Bucks in a pretty commanding fashion. They dominated the Eastern Conference team with the best record in Cleveland. They dominated them. I'm not saying this translates to dominating the Knicks, but if they perform at the level that they just did over the first two rounds, they've got an excellent chance of being in the NBA Finals for the first time in 25 years.
Yeah, and that'll be a fun deal to watch. What else is going on in the world of Mike DeCourcy?
Yeah, other than that, I'm working on some long-term projects, but got a column coming out tomorrow about this NBA season and what I think it portends for the future and why I think that's a positive for the NBA. The NBA has been a dynastic league for nearly 40 years because of the way their salary cap was structured. The introduction of what they call bird rights before the cap was even put in place turned it into a dynastic league. You could keep your guys together. And so if you got a great group, Shaq and Kobe, Duncan and the Admiral, et cetera, if you could keep those guys, you could keep those guys because you had the ability to pay them more than everybody else. And that turned the league in a particular direction. I think the way they restructured the salary cap is changing it back into a direction of egalitarianism, so to speak. Where everybody's kind of got a shot if they do it right. And that wasn't the case for a very long time in the NBA. I like this NBA better.
Heath asking for your thoughts on Aaron Rodgers and the Steelers, but to do that, we'd have to take a break and go into another one.
How about we address that next week, either post Aaron Rodgers signing or with it continuing to be hanging around in limbo? How about we do that then?
Quick 30-second thought on it. Good thing, bad thing?
The whole process is bad for the Steelers. The waiting this long, considering it, there's nothing good about this process. And I think that also it opportunity cost. I thought that Justin Fields was a better signing for the Steelers on a couple-year deal for not a ton of money, and then put him in a legit competition with Mason Rudolph. I think that was a better move for the Steelers than trying to jump on the 41-year-old, 42-year-old narcissist train. Yep. Not interested.
Scott, I have the same opinion about that. Not even a Steelers fan. Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News, Fox, and Big Ten Networks. Make sure you're giving him a follow, Michael. Thank you very much, sir.
Thanks, Jim.
You betcha. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on this Tuesday. Hope your week is going well. We've got the Indianapolis 500 coming up this weekend on Sunday. And not just that, I guess. You've got the NASCAR event down in Charlotte as well. So, and most people, if you're just chilling at home and watching things, you could watch Kyle Larson attempt the double of running both races. But the Indianapolis 500, who's going to win that? All kinds of fun things going on with the pole winner, the front row itself. Such an international flavor. Pato Award, Sato, oh, daggone it, the guy on the pole, Schwartzman. It's crazy, but it just makes it all that more intriguing. What is that first lap going to be like? Someone yesterday said that they bet that Sato leads the first lap. It will be it'll be interesting. I would say no. I would go with Schwartzman, man. That dude, if you could come in and do what he did, that first lap is not going to change. He is going to drop the hammer, and he's got the inside position anyway. It takes more than a lap to unless you get a bad jump at the start. I don't see anybody jumping in front of him. So we'll see how that goes. But I'm looking forward to not only you have the Indianapolis 500, you also have the NBA Finals, or not Finals, the NBA Conference Finals in play. Game 3, as the Pacers will be taking on the Knicks. And it's wild because this thing will move fast. The conference finals. Every 2 days, there's a game. It's boom, 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 boom. It is NBA every day because you've got the Western finals on a day, Eastern finals on a day, Western finals on a, it just goes back and forth. So if the series go long, which I would expect this Knicks-Pacers series to go 7 games, I mean, I just don't think that either team is that much better than the other. It's going to be tight, and I think it's going to be fun as heck. It not just because it's the Knicks and the Pacers, but just because these two teams, both of them, have upset the number one and number two seeds in the conference, but both of them are playing their best basketball of the season. Both the Pacers very confident in what they're doing. So looking forward to that. But, hey, Heath asking, is DeVries offered any Indiana kids yet? We'll wait till we get to the recruiting to talk all that. But I hear of recent, I don't think so, but it's just been out and about at the various AAU circuits and all of that. So, but we'll talk more about recruiting. The Indianapolis 500, who's your pick to win that? Who do you think? You still have Joseph Newgarden, which he's not in the back like I thought he was going to be, but just over row 4, so that's not a big deal making up through that kind of traffic. The guys on the front row, doesn't really matter in the big scheme of things. It comes down to strategy, pit strategy, position, track position, experience. Schwartzman has no experience. Dusty Bennett says Newgarden will be starting last, so that is the case. Now, when I had Greg on, Greg Rakestraw, he said that he would not be. Did something happen in the interim that I missed to force that? So, guess what? The Oscar Myers fleet of Wienermobiles go head to head in the inaugural Weenie 500. Oh my. Oh my, this is real. Breaking news here. Oscar Mayer announces the Weenie 500, a first of its kind spectacle where their fleet of Wienermobiles will haul buns to the legendary Indianapolis Motor Speedway for a race unlike any other. Ahead of this year's Indianapolis 500, which draws more than... How many hot dogs do you think will be consumed at the 500? 30,000. 30,000 hot dogs in one day, boom, in one spot. Just think about all the concessions. And that's with allowing people to bring their own coolers in, which I think is an amazing thing. It's an amazing thing that you get to do that. Now, at the Derby, buddy, they're wanding you, checking you, but you can, it's easy. The Weenie 500 will also mark the first meetup of all six Wienermobiles in over a decade and the first competitive race for the fleet, each sporting an all-new look. Each Wienermobile will represent a different regional dog, including the Chili Dog of the Midwest, the New York Dog is the East, the Slaw Dog, which is the Southeast, the Sonoran Dog, which is the Southwest, and the Chili Dog in the South. Seattle Dog is the Northwest. I misread the Miss West. It's Chai Dog. What the hell is a Chai Dog? That's a Chicago hot dog, I'm assuming, right? So I'll go with that. So that's going to, there you go. That's something. You're going to have the, are they going to race on the track? I'm assuming. That will be funny. Huh. Bring it all, baby. They're bringing it all. But you've got the snake pit. Snake pit. And remember who, you remember who the grand marshal of the snake pit is? Gronkowski. Gronk. Gronk is a very appropriate representative there. So, but yeah, I'm looking forward to the race. I'm looking forward to both races, though. But the Charlotte race will be going on. It'll start before the NBA game, but it'll be going on during it. So it's a long day. Think of Kyle Larson driving those 1,100 miles. Whoo, baby. That's a lot. Let's see. Bill Belichick, Jordan Hudson, viral CBS interview has bettors fading UNC. About them apples. When this is from The Athletic, Max Meyer. When North Carolina hired Bill Belichick as its coach and put its college football spotlight squarely on Chapel Hill, and unfortunately, the excitement surrounding the huge hire has faded, as most of the news surrounding Belichick this offseason hasn't been about football. Instead, it's been about his relationship with his 24-year-old girlfriend, Jordan Hudson. And if there's one thing bettors are looking for before getting down some wagers, it's a good angle. Bettors are locked into UNC offseason drama, says Hal England, a trading manager at BetGM. Before recent interviews and news, BetGM was taking a majority of bets on UNC's win total over, but has seen a sharp decline since, with almost every ticket on the under now. So there's that. Hey, let's take a quick break. When we come back, the man, the myth, the legend. Hey, bro, Kevin Brockway. That's right. We're back with more from the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company Studios on this Tuesday. And man, oh man, superstar K-Bro Kevin Brockway joins us now. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. Yeah, I saw you were on with Mike earlier and talking a little bit about international college basketball and all sorts of stuff. And I know, did you read the Pat 40 column I thought was pretty good this morning about the Notre Dame-USC football series also, about that potentially going by the wayside, which I thought was very well done, speaking of another star.
I did not see that, but I will pull that up. Why would that go away? Just because
apparently Notre Dame wants it to continue, but USC has some trepidation because of, again, and this goes back to the Big Ten, the travel, right? Because they've been they travel so much to the Midwest. It's another road trip. They're talking about maybe doing some neutral site games instead, you know, closer to the West Coast. But Notre Dame wants it in their home and away stadium. So that's one of the issues. And another issue too is I think Notre Dame's won 6 of the last 7. Lincoln Riley's not thrilled about that. And adding to the difficulty of USC schedule now that they're in the Big Ten, it's a little different. So that combination.
Yeah. We've seen a lot of big time games go by the wayside and it's not fun and we don't like it, but there's not a lot you could do about it, to be honest with you. And at the end of the day,
Forty blames conference realignment. He is on the he's been on that train of and he it's personal to him because his daughter was at Stanford, but the implosion of the Pac-12 conference just kind of bewilders him, the fact that college sports let it happen, getting rid of all those rivalries on the West Coast. I think what happened was USC and UCLA were probably tired of the lack of revenue streams or playing in, a lot of pro markets, right? Because I went to San Francisco for the Elite Eight and Sweet 16. And look, they don't care much about college sports out there.
Yeah, that's the problem too, though, because that's a problem that hurts UCLA, USC, and the NIL fields. And I don't know if they're, I would assume that they're making up ground there. And one would think that it would be a lot easier for them to make up grounds because both of them have tons of well-known alumni and of the sort, and they have to have tons of alumni that we don't even know about that are wealthier than God, probably.
Yeah, it's interesting with the city schools too, and you have that with, Miami here. You do have, the big city boosters down there. But I think what Florida has, say, compared to Miami, is Florida has the whole state because the majority of the people that live here are Florida graduates. The majority of Miami, Miami's a smaller school. It's like 9,000 undergrads compared to like 50,000 for, Florida, which is a flag state school. And it's a lot like probably Indiana there, maybe compared to a school like Louisville or Kentucky and Louisville. It's just a different dynamic when you're in a city. So you get those big city boosters, but you don't have the state. I mean, here, a lot of the Florida grads control citrus, agriculture, banking. So there's a lot of big money that the University of Florida can draw from in terms of, its NIL support and its alumni base.
Yeah, and it's been fun to watch college football as it is morphed, but all sports, but no sport like I think college football has really, because of the difficulty of what it of getting this thing to be a much more parallel sport, and it has, and it's fun to me. I of course, your Indiana's a part of that. I mean, you covered Indiana and how poor of a program it was, and now they're the opposite. Man, they're on the tip of everybody's tongue. They're shooting for a back-to-back college football playoff appearances, and they have a legitimate shot at that.
We're in a bizarro world where Florida basketball is winning national championships and Indiana football is in the college football playoff. I mean, it's interesting. But the Kelly School of Business, right? Mark Cuban, you've got some big time alums there. The Cook family. It's there's money to be had, I think, everywhere, in terms of a lot of these big flagship schools. And it's just a matter of how you mobilize it. And with the House versus NCAA settlement coming and the $20.5 million coming there, the revenue sharing, how do you break down the revenue? Georgia has already said 75% football. Florida's not going to disclose it. I don't know how Indiana's going to do that.
Everybody's going to do that. There's no way you can't do it. If you have a football program, you have to put the money into football because, A, that's where the money comes from. More than 75% of the money is coming from football. Yeah. They're getting 75% of it. So I have no problem with that. My question is that going to equalize things even more? But since NIL is still out there and separate, and on top of this, programs that like Texas, who have generated an alleged $40 million payroll, that's without the House settlement.
Think about this, though. It's interesting with the Big East Conference, for example, that doesn't have football, right?
Right.
What kind of advantage are they going to have with this
basketball
compared to Florida? It's very interesting.
Yeah, in basketball, the money they're going to be getting a ton more of the money, and does that carry over? I mean, I think that's why we saw. Kevin Willard, be willing to go from Maryland, from a Big Ten school, to a school that doesn't have football. I think he went there with purpose because of that.
Richard Pitino to Xavier too. Yeah, very similar. When you think about it, schools are going to be, guys are going to be going to the Big Ten. You know, maybe that's why a guy like Greg McDermott stays at Creighton, because he can see that advantage coming. So it's going to be. It's going to be very interesting to see how that materializes, over the next few years. So it's nice to get a few shout outs there. I appreciate that. You know, Cabro in the house. I like that. But
ears should have been burning a couple of weeks ago. I sent you a text that you did not respond to, by the way.
I'm sorry.
Steve Wiltfong, I think, was on maybe. We were talking football. Who's. Actually, isn't there an On3 guy that lives in Gainesville?
Andy Staples. Your buddy Andy Staples.
Okay, Andy Staples was
Andy's
on.
He's a good egg, yeah.
Yeah, it was Andy, rather. Andy was on, and we were talking about you and your prowess at the karaoke mic.
Oh, yeah. Andy has seen me in action. Yeah, my crazy days of my 30s when we were both starting out on the beat. Andy's a good egg. He's a good man and very well connected. And really, he took that opportunity at Sports Illustrated and ran with it. And then obviously went on to On3 and he's doing some remarkable work. So it was amazing to see him kind of grow and develop from the Florida beat to where he is now. He's done a remarkable job.
Absolutely. I'm glad to have him. Fred asking, does Big East Butler have a football team? You know what? That's a great question because I know they used to, but I don't know if they still do or not. And
I saw a football field outside of Hinkle the last time I was there.
Well, I know that they did, and I don't recall it going away. But that's something somebody can Google. I'll let you Google that. But most of the Big East does not. Most of the Big East teams do not have.
They don't have big time football. Let's put it that way. They don't have FBS level football,
and they don't have to worry about spending 75% of the money there. And I think that it's going to be interesting. It is going to be interesting to see how that changes. And
okay, I just looked this up. Pioneer Football League, FCS or an FCS school.
Yeah, there you go. So it's not something that is going to impact the basketball program much. And it'll be interesting to keep an eye on that and see what they can do with that extra money. Does that change things? Because Richard Pitino didn't go there for nothing, but he also wanted to get back east. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. And I think, that works well for him in terms of that situation. But, as far as Butler is concerned, Thad Mata, right, he's there. And it's going to be that's a very competitive league, the Big East. And, Dan Hurley, I think, them getting Caravan back too is going to be pretty big. And Another thing I guess we haven't touched on is the ex-Gator Sam Alexis coming up there. Now, Sam. Well,
I was going to bring that up. I didn't know how long you could stay, but I was thinking about doing another segment and talking about that as well. But, Sam Alexis, a former Gator,
yep,
now on Indiana team. He was on with us last week. And he's a guy that is going to be considered one of the rim protectors, a guy that can work around the rim, not tied to it, but because Indiana is going to have a different offense. Reed Bailey at 6'10 is in there, but he's can also stretch the floor, so he's not going to be tied to the anchored to the basket either. Josh Harris, another Florida guy from North Florida, though, but. It's going to be interesting to see what this offense can do.
We know Sam is more of a, he's good back to the basket. I liked his post moves early in the year. And sometimes he tries to face up and shoot threes, and I'm not quite as in love with that aspect of his game as I am when he plays down low, and he rebounds too. He's tough. He's got some toughness to him. I think what happened was, he had that ankle injury in February against Mississippi State, the same time the Condon went down.
You know what? Let's take a break, if you don't mind. Let me take a break to keep this on track, and we'll talk about Sam Alexis. Yeah. You've got the man, K-Bro, Kevin Brockway, from the Gainesville Sun with us, formerly on the IU beat as well. Much more coming up from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on this Tuesday. K-Bro, Kevin Brockway with us, and we could not be any happier. K-Bro covers the Florida Gators, who are coming off of a big-time national championship run. Todd Golden had not even won an NCAA game, and this is a team that was made up of guys that most of you had never heard of before this started happening. And that's kind of what Indiana is looking like, Kevin, a team that of a lot of guys that people are not familiar with. And that's okay, because in this day and age, they might have expected to pick up one guy here or there that was known. But it's going to be a roster full of guys that Indiana appears they're going after winners, not names. Guys that like Alexis and guys that were on conference championship teams of the like. But Sam Alexis is a guy that he didn't get a ton of minutes at Florida, and maybe one of the reasons that he moved on. But he will get all the minutes he wants at Indiana.
Yeah, well, what happened to Sam, Jim, was, I was mentioning before, the ankle injury. He and Alex Connor had ankle injuries at the same time. That put Florida's front court in a bind. Micah Hamlogged and then burned his red shirt and played for the rest of the season. And so what happens is Condon came back before Sam, and when Condon came back, you had that four-player post-rotation that Todd liked, and there just weren't minutes for Sam. But Sam, in the non-conference schedule, played quite a bit. And early in the SEC schedule, and he quit. Like I said, he quitted himself okay, and I think I like him as a rebounder. I like him as a toughness guy, and I think he can be productive guy with starters minutes at Indiana. I mean, I think he can be a guy that say averages 10 and 6 rebounds if he's a starter, and if he comes off the bench. He could be okay there too if he gets 10 or 20 minutes a game, which is what he was getting, before that whole situation in February. It just so happened that but I think that even that experience being in the locker room during the championship run, I think he got, a few minutes in the Sweet 16 game against Maryland. I think, seeing that and being around a national championship team could rub off and serve him well. So, by the way, Jim, I have to run because we have breaking news here that we were expecting.
Boogie Flan.
5-star Boogie Flan commits to Florida. So obviously a big get for the Gators, and their revamped backcourt is now just complete. So he visited yesterday, and that certainly is a big deal. And now Florida goes off to the White House tomorrow to celebrate their national championship, and certainly will be in, and high spirits for next year. Now the last big piece is waiting to see if Alex Condon will come back. He has until May 28th to decide, but Ruben Chiniello, another starting center, came back yesterday. So a lot of good news for Florida basketball this week.
Yeah. How many schools has Boogie Plan been to?
Well, you know, no, I mean, he played at Arkansas last year and he went in the draft and, but you know, five-star kid from New York has got some toughness to him. You know, he had the thumb injury last year too, and didn't shoot it great, I thought, but 5.1 assists. And, I think, you know, Todd will, I think, rein in the shot selection a little bit there. And, I think he's going to be a good fit here.
What does Florida look like coming back?
Well, with Flan now, I you know, if they get Alex Condon back, I think they're going to be pretty good because they'll have a very experienced front court and they'll have the talent in the back court with Xavier Lee, the guard from Princeton, and Boogie Flan. They also picked up a kid from Ohio University, A.J. Brown, who's a shooter, maybe not quite as talented, but I think a guy that will fit and be a good robot guy. And they have a couple of returning guys, kind of Urban Klavstar, who played a little bit last year, a good three-point shooter from, you know, the Slovenia. And then also A.J. Brown's younger brother, Alex Brown, who's a sophomore, rising sophomore, who they're very high on. They think that could be a developmental guy and play a little bit off the bench this year.
Todd Golden seems to be just a guy ahead of his time from a coaching standpoint. Very young, but, man, he does the right things, makes the right moves, sees players, is able to identify talent, all of that.
For sure, no question. But, Jim, I got to run, and I wish you and the audience well, and sorry the timing didn't work out where I could stay on longer.
Yeah, we'll do it again, brother. Appreciate you. K-Bro, Kevin Brockway joining us here on the program. As he's got to go deal with the breaking news of Boogie Fland heading to Florida. So there's that, man. And that's what I mean. I'm surprised at Indiana. That's the one thing that they didn't land, you know, a guy or so that was a known commodity. But, hey, Darren DeVries is doing it his way. It was the same way with Indiana football a year ago. And Kurt Cignetti, the guys that he were bringing in, nah, nobody had heard of those guys. No Indiana fans had heard of those guys. So he gets to do what he wants to do. And it's the first year. It'll be interesting to see how it goes. But you can also see they're out working the recruiting trail. They're doing the job. They're putting in the time. They're getting out. They're out at these places. They're meeting with these guys, talking to them, letting them know that, hey, we want you. This is what how you'll fit in. They're getting guys to come visit. I know that some of that happened before, but it's a different feel to this, a different feel to the recruiting attack by this staff. And you have guys that are known recruiters, Kenny Johnson and Drew Adams. Those guys are known to be good recruiters. So that is not a fear. That should not be a fear by Indiana fans that the Indiana staff, they're out recruiting. And they're doing it the old-fashioned way right now. They're getting with the kids and talking to them and watching them and identifying the talent that they feel will fit into the system that is going to be run, and a system that is going to be a lot more varied and open to watch. So we get to look forward to that, which is a great thing. So lots going on, man. Lots of it was an open weekend in basketball, like I said, this past weekend, and guys were out and about. There are so many guys that our eyes are being kept on, offers that have been made by Indiana. Trey Thompson, intrigued that he gets an offer. He's a rising 2026 player after a standout weekend during the first live period. He's from Greenville, Tennessee. You can read more about this at thehoosier.com. But Trey Thompson landed a scholarship offer from the Indiana basketball program. He plays for Tennessee Impact on the Adidas 3SSB circuit. He's ranked 136 nationally in the On3 industry ranking and the number 22 power forward. So the Indiana staff saw him numerous times this weekend, including head coach Darren DeVries. So head coach Darren DeVries out and about at these events. Big difference already. Trust me on that. And it is going to pay dividends because that's what it takes. That's what it takes. That's how you end up. You're not going to land all these guys. You're going to offer 10, 12 guys, and you're going to land two, three, maybe. It's a numbers game. But you have to put in the time with each and every one of the players. You have to talk to them. You have to converse with them. You have to develop relationships with them. You have to show them what you have to offer to them, each and every one of them, knowing that two-thirds of them are not going to come, but you still have to do it. And it is being done now for Indiana by this staff. So fans should feel better, much better about it. This program seems to be in the right hands. Now, of course, it all comes down to product on the floor. There's no definitely about that. Jason says this is definitely a different type of recruiting process. No doubt. I mean, we've seen so many guys out there already, right from the jump. But that's not because they were trying to disprove something that happened before. It's because that's what you do. That's what they have done always. That's how you build a team. That's how you build a program. This is what you have to do. It's part of it. It's accepted. Everybody knows that. And you can't just sit back and throw out an offer and say, here, all right, here's the bag we're going to give you. Lots more to it. And looking forward to seeing how that's going to change. Next year will be the first time fans really get to an understanding of how well this staff did in recruiting. And I think they're going to do fine. Now, they're going to need to have some success on the basketball court, I think. But I don't know that that matters a lot to these recruits as far as watching the style of play. If they don't win some games just because you get beat, yeah, you get beat. But it's the style of play they'll be looking at. And, oh, wow, I could fit in right there. Oh, wow, that's where I can help. And that's exactly what these coaches will be telling these guys. This is where we need you. This is what you could do for us. This is how we were going to use you. These are the opportunities that you would have. So, Five said, Coach S here just nabbed a good player for LSU. That's good. Good for him to see. And not doubting them, but it just was not done that way at Indiana. They didn't happen. They did not. Not only did they not land guys, they lost guys. Guys that they should have gotten. There's no way that they don't land Braylon Mullins. They lost Liam McNeely. Bad. Jalen Harrelson. They lost all the big recruiting battles previously. You can't do that. So we'll see how that turns out next with in-state stuff, because right now we're just talking about talent, and in-state is not going to be it's not as important as it used to be. Now, if you have a Jalen Harrelson or if you have a Braylon Mullins or Trent Sisley, yes, you want to get those guys. And it's important to get them, in my opinion, because it shows that your program still has that strength within the state, because you're competing against Purdue, Notre Dame, but you're also competing against the schools that are all right outside, Ohio State, Michigan State, Michigan, Illinois, Iowa, all heavily recruit the state of Indiana, as well as many others. So, yeah, that's going to be important to nab the top guy as well. Going to take a quick break from the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios. I hope you're having a great day. Welcome back to the Hard Truth Distilling Company studios on this Tuesday. So glad to have you along. Indianapolis 500 weekend, baby. The flag drops on Sunday. And do we have history with Joseph Newgarden winning his third straight, or Ballou has been, he's been flying. Alex Ballou has returned to the top of the speed charts Monday at the Indy 500. And he might be the guy to beat. He is the point. Greg Rakestraw said this yesterday, but he's the series points leader. He's won four of the first five races this season. To me, that's amazing. He led at 226.765 miles per hour in the Chip Ganassi Racing Honda as drivers ran in thick packs on traffic around the two-mile oval. So that was practice with traffic. A marked contrast from the solo contest of pure speed during the last 2 days of PPG Presents Armed Forces qualifying. Ballou will start sixth in the race Sunday, May 25th. So, man, I talked about those storylines. The entire front row, Kyle Larson, Joseph Newgarden, Alex Ballou. It's just pick your poison there. It is so much to watch. And this is the granddaddy of them all. And if Alex Ballou wins this race, he could literally take off the rest of the season and win the points championship. That's crazy, but it's a fun deal. 500 is tough to win. Everything has to go right. No mistakes, no pit mistakes, no untimely errors, no untimely tire issues or fuel strategy, tire strategy, pit strategy. Just all kinds of things that have to go right to win the race. But we'll see. Two-time 500 winner Takuma Sato was third. This is another storyline. Sato is a one-off. He doesn't even drive anymore. And he made it to the front row. And he's still, not only has he made it to the front row, he was third in this practice amongst with heavy traffic on the track. He's a contender. Be cool to see David Letterman get him a win. Jack Harvey, he'll start 26th. He jumped to fourth in race setup at 226 miles an hour. So it's gonna be fun, man. I love the Indy 500. It is a spectacle. It is. Not only is it the world's largest sporting event, to me, it's just one of the greatest sporting events in the world. It is just an amazing thing that is, there's so much history, there's so much tradition that goes into this thing. I mean, from the Yard of Bricks to the winners drinking the milk, there are so many little traditional historical things that they're just amazing. You go back and you look at the cars they used to run, how dangerous it used to be. And this is the same for NASCAR. You go back in time and you look at some of that stuff, the window net that Indy cars don't have, but NASCAR and any other cars like that have the window nets. Do you know how that came about? I think it was Darlington, but I'm not sure. I'd have to look that up. But Richard Petty came out of turn four somehow, and I don't know if he got loose or someone hit him, whatever. Anyway, there used to be a brick wall that separated pit road and the track. It was on the outside of the pit road, and he hit that brick wall. I believe he hit it first on the end and it just flipped. The car flipped several times, and at the end, the car was upside down, and I think you can see an arm hanging out the window. And he looks like he's dead. Obviously, he wasn't, but his mom fastened a window net. I forget what she did it out of, but she created the first window net for all of racing, which is crazy to but necessity is the mother of invention, right? But yeah, that's how that came about. I don't it was at Darlington, actually. So I was right about that. But if you go back, and the wreck is wild. I mean, wickedly horrible. There, you look like there's no one that could survive it, which was crazy. But he was flying. I don't know. There's no, I don't see a speed, but you know he was going. But yeah, his mom, let's see, Petty's wife, Linda, and Petty's brother, Maurice. No, that's they hanged him. But there was no blood or gore. Somehow he managed to survive that, like I said. And his mom, I don't know who had the idea. I'd have to read it, but that's how that came about. So necessity is the mother of all invention, as usual. Indiana looking to invent some wins this year. But so is Purdue. So is everybody else in the Big Ten. Who's going to do it? Who is going to be the Big Ten winner in basketball? My prediction, I'm going to predict Michigan. Right now, I'm going to go with Michigan. We'll see how that turns out. But how good is the Big Ten going to be overall? That's going to be interesting. I'm not sure. There's a lot of turnover. Maryland lost their coach. They lost a lot of players. They are not, I do not expect a top year from them. So I think it's going to be some familiarity at the top, obviously, with Purdue, Michigan, Illinois. I don't know what Michigan State's going to be like yet. I don't know what UCLA is going to be like yet. Who's going to be the surprise team? What's Wisconsin going to bring? Always tough. They always just, you see, if you noticed, haven't heard anything about Wisconsin. Heard stuff about Purdue, heard stuff about Michigan, heard stuff about Illinois, lots of stuff about Indiana. Michigan State, Wisconsin, just quietly behind the scenes doing what they need to do. It'd be interesting to see how, Daniel, appreciate you, my brother, very, very much. Hope you're enjoying your day. But it's going to be interesting to see who is the king of the hill. A lot of people think Purdue, this is their year to win a national championship. I don't know what the player that they added will bring. That will be the difference to me, because they're still, even with Braden Smith and Fletcher Lawyer and Trey Kaufman Wren, they're not, that's not national championship caliber talent. They're very good. Don't get me wrong. I'm not knocking them. I'm just saying, to win a national championship, you have to have an NBA level player on your team. First round NBA type. We'll see how that works out. But I still think that Michigan is just going to be a team that is built to win more today. And it's going to be interesting. What does Indiana do? That's going to be the curiosity. How do they come out and compete? Will Indiana basketball be last year's Indiana football? Who knows? I mean, we're not sitting here thinking that that's going to be the case, but we weren't thinking that for football either. So we'll find out. They may surprise everybody And that may be exactly what Darren DeVries is looking to do. Take the doubts, take the uncertainty, put it in a chip and put it on each and every one of his players and put it on their shoulders and say, this is how you have to play. Nobody believes in you. No one thinks you can win at the elite level. Worked in football. Who's to say if you have the right pieces, that's all it takes. The right pieces with the right people doing the right things. That's what it takes. Can they do that? Sure. There's no reason they can't. No reason they can't. And I would expect Indiana to fight because we know they're going to play hard defensively. I think they're going to win games that people... Here's the thing that's going to happen that has not happened. I'm not saying they're going to be in the top six. I don't... And if they are, boy, will I be giving kudos to Darren DeVries. I don't know enough about all the other teams yet. So first of all, so this is going to change most likely. But as of right now, I don't see them in the top six. I don't think anybody else does either. But it's not saying that they can't be. They can. This team could surprise the hell out of us. But I do think they're going to do something you haven't seen in a decade. They are going to win games they weren't expected to win. They're going to have a heck of a schedule. Louisville, Kentucky is on there, amongst many others, the Big Ten teams. I think they're going to win someplace there where they're not supposed to. Underdog, whatever you want to call it. Top 10? Five Left's asking in the top 10. If that's of the Big Ten, yes. Oh, yeah, I don't think that they're going to be bad. I just don't know where they're going to be because I don't know where everybody else is going to be for sure. We have to wait. We just don't have the ideas of these teams anymore because of all the changes, because of all the different players, because of how each roster is different, so different every year. Now, certain teams are set. And we know Michigan set, Purdue set, Florida just added a big piece. So there's still teams adding big pieces to their roster. Where does Florida end up? What does the SEC do? Are they going to be able to repeat that season? That'd be something. Five says Dusty has the blueprint. I am not disagreeing with that at all. He put a team together last year in 1 year that was capable of winning the Big Ten tournament, that led the Big Ten, that had a shot at winning the Big Ten title, that was nationally competitive, that had great pieces. That's why they're my pick to win the Big Ten this year over Purdue. I agree with what Five says. Shout out to David. Thanks for joining the show. But that's what makes it fun. We get to wait. We have to watch it all. Hey, but I'm more fired up for football. I am jacked to see what Indiana can do this year. And I think it's going to be not only good, but fun. And speaking of winning a game you're not supposed to, I think Indiana football is going to win a game they're not supposed to. And they only have three of those on their schedule. And those are all the road games at Iowa, at Oregon, and at Penn State. Now, Iowa and Oregon would be the easiest of those, and I should not use the word easy, to accomplish. But this is going to be not a a defining thing, but Indiana football needs to get one of those wins to climb one more rung on the college football ladder. They need to do something that actually gets the attention. 11-1 got the attention of people. Obviously, they made the college football playoffs. But how many people were of the opinion that Indiana didn't belong? A lot of national people. They do need to do something to kind of shut them up. And that something is winning on the road at one of those places, because they are all going to be good. There, two of those three are already ranked, both in the top 10. Penn State is picked by number one by some, and Illinois is the top 10 team. Iowa isn't ranked because of last year. I think that they're going to be a lot tougher than people realize, but I don't know what Oregon's going to have just yet. Haven't gotten into figuring out what they have, but it's a tough place to go. Alton Stadium out there, the travel. We'll talk about the travel. Now, the traveling is tough. It is tough, but I'm always going to remember a few years ago when Vanderbilt traveled to Hawaii. Nashville to Hawaii to play Hawaii, and they beat the ever-loving snot out of them. Now, they're obviously a better team, but how much does that travel play into the ability to win or lose games? We've seen Penn State go out and win on the West Coast at USC. We've seen it happen. Ohio State should have won at Oregon last year. How much will that affect Indiana's attempt to beat Oregon? So we shall see, but I think it's going to be a good run. Just like this has been a good run. I can't thank everybody enough. Mike DeCourcy and K-Bro, and most importantly, each and every one of you. We're back tomorrow to do it all again. Until then, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.